honest information about living a healthy lifestyle on RadioMD.com. It's time for Naturally Savvy with natural visionary Andrea Donsky and health journalist Lisa Davis.
Here on Naturally Savvy, we love memoirs and we also love to talk about issues that affect the lives of so many. And we just read a fabulous book, Haldol and Hyacinth, A Bipolar Life. It is by our guest now, Melody Moisey. Hi, Melody.
For having me.
We're so glad to have you on, Melody. I was immediately drawn into your book. You are so honest to talk about your experience with bipolar. Talk about, for people who aren't familiar, I think there's so many misconceptions about what that actually means. We hear manic depressive, we hear bipolar.
Yeah, you know, it used to be called manic depression, and now the more, it really is, I think, a more accurate term, manic depression, because it's basically just a manic side and a depressive side that is very similar to what people recognize as unipolar depression or major depressive disorder, where you have low energy and helplessness and feelings of worthlessness and guilt and things like that. But on the other side of it, you have this higher energy, higher irritability, racing thoughts and impulsive behaviors and sort of poor judgment that comes with mania. And the poor judgment comes with depression, too. And also those two poles don't always stay that way. So there's also these mixed episodes that some people experience, and suicide is actually much more common during those mixed episodes than in the purely manic or depressive phases of the illness. But it's an illness that affects quite a few people in this country. So, and there's a spectrum of it. So you can fall anywhere from the bottom, not so bad, and some people can manage without medication, or towards the higher end of it. And there's bipolar 2, which is a lighter version, and then bipolar 1, lighter version, if you want to call that. And bipolar 1 is what I have. Where I experience acute manic episodes if I'm not treating it properly. And those episodes can include hallucinations and delusions.
Wow. So explain to us a little bit about, you talk about treatment. What are some ways that people can treat it if they have it? I guess first let's talk diagnosis and then treatment. Mm-hmm. So how would someone get diagnosed of having it, and then how could they treat it?
So it's misdiagnosis is the rule, not the exception. It's very common. For me, I was misdiagnosed for 10 years. For most people, it takes 8 to 10 years to get a proper diagnosis of bipolar disorder. And I was misdiagnosed with doctors all around me. Both my parents are doctors, and my sister is a doctor. So it was something that happened because the manic sides just never got that bad until they did get that bad. And when they did, I had an acute manic episode and a psychotic break. And that I was 29 years old, and I was hospitalized. And at that point, it was very easy to diagnose as bipolar disorder. But it's important to get first, second, third, fourth, fifth opinions. I really encourage people to get lots of different medical opinions, even if it seems like it's expensive at first. It could save you a lot of grief in the end, because the medications for unipolar depression, which is what's most commonly misdiagnosed, actually exacerbate bipolar disorder. So it's really important to get a proper diagnosis up front. And then when it comes to treatment, there's different treatments for everybody is going to be different. There are protocols, but I'm skeptical of that because everyone is a different person. And depending on where you fall on the spectrum and just who you are and how your chemistry works, one drug may work for you and not for me, and we may both have bipolar 1. So it's very much sort of you have to try things out and do one thing at a time very slowly and not do two interventions, two medications at the same time, which some doctors will do, but I think it's a very ineffective way to treat somebody because then you don't know which medication is working, if it's one or the other or the combination of the two. And a lot of people with these bipolar and schizophrenia and other serious mental illnesses tend to be over-medicated. It's definitely fine to take medication. I take medication, and if it works, that's great, but you shouldn't have to be taking more than you need just because you have a doctor who might be a little lazy. I don't know if that's a good way of identifying it, but it happens.
I mean, if it's accurate. You know, one of the things we talked about, Melody, about talking about today with you is about violence and mental illness and the misconception that people have, and especially how it's perpetrated by the media. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, thank you for asking about it. You know, a lot of people, a lot of mainstream media sort of reports on mental illness only when we have these mass shootings or events like that and national tragedies. But the truth is that there are twice as many suicides as there are homicides, more than twice as many suicides as there are homicides in this country. More than 100 people take their own lives every day, disproportionately young, disproportionately veterans, two groups we claim to care about. But we're not talking about suicide. We get very excited about these, or the media gets very excited about these sensationalized stories. But these suicides, that's what's happening every day. And also, two-thirds of all gun fatalities are suicides, and more than half of all suicides are gun-related. So also, when you want to talk about gun control, it's not that we're getting guns and going out and killing other people. We're killing ourselves. So surely, gun control is a mental health issue, but not for the reasons that the mainstream media might make you want to think.
Wow. You know, I mean, I'm just listening to you, and I'm kind of in awe as I'm listening to you speak. You know, tell us a little bit about some of the common behaviors. So if someone, let's say you were talking, I want to go back to misdiagnosis for a minute. So what are some common behaviors that, let's say, someone is exhibiting that when they go to their doctor, they could help them a little bit more in terms of coming up with that diagnosis, so they don't have to wait 10 years like they did for you?
Yeah, and that's the thing. For me, no one ruled out mania. That is something really important, because depression is much more common than bipolar disorder. But it's important. I wish someone had asked, have you had periods of your life where you've had very high energy, increased, really racing thoughts is something that has always sort of affected me. And sometimes I can have what they call flights of ideas, where I'll have these racing thoughts and all these different ideas will come to me. And eventually it gets to the point that they make sense and they connect in my own brain, but not to the people on the outside, so I become sort of incoherent. So I wish they had asked me about that, about sleep, periods of time where I wasn't getting sleep at all. Towards the end, before I was diagnosed and had that psychotic break, I was sleeping every other night. And my whole goal in life, and I write about it in the book, is I was saying at the time to myself, to my diseased brain, I'm going to live like Prince. Because apparently I read somewhere that Prince does not sleep, that he just goes to sleep when he's tired occasionally. And we can't all be Prince, right? I mean, that mentality that I could just be able to do that and sleep whenever I felt like it, that wasn't something that was good for me. And eventually that's what induced the acute manic episode.
I find it interesting, you know, the thing about mental illness, whether it's, you know, what you're talking about, whether it's severe anxiety, OCD, you know, all these different types of mental illness, I find that, you know, people are ashamed of it because it's not something that people could see, right? It's something that you could hide. It's not a physical ailment that people have. It's something that, you know, people that have it can hide behind. And I was one of them. I mean, I had massive anxiety. At least I know we've spoken about it for 20 years of my life. And it was something by looking at me, you couldn't tell. And I think that I mean, listening to you speak, I think it's incredible that you've come out and you're outspoken about it, because I know that was something that you had to deal with, right? I think, was it your parents that wanted you to keep it under wraps?
Yeah, you know, and a lot of people did. They didn't want me to be judged. They didn't want my career to, you know, go down the tubes, that I would lose credibility, and that's what I was afraid of too, that I would lose credibility. And no doubt I lost credibility in certain circles, and people said, oh, of course, well, she's crazy. And I'm an activist. My first book was about young Muslim Americans. And I had a big fear that after I wrote this book, people would say, oh, well, she's crazy because she's Muslim, or she's Muslim because she's crazy, and then I'd be reinforcing all these other stereotypes.
Right, of course.
Yeah, so and when you talk about the shame, I mean, I think that stigma is so much more disabling, and the shame that we feel and the fear that comes with it, and of course the silence, is far more disabling than any illness in and of itself. And that says a lot, because 4 of the top 10 leading causes of disability in the world are mental illnesses. And part of that shame is on us, for sure, but part of it comes from when we were talking about the media and violence and things like that, because the truth is that we're no more violent than the general population when you control for substance abuse. We're much more likely to be victims of violent crimes and become victims in general. So that's another part of perpetrating the shame and the stigma.
Well, thank you, Melody. Words of wisdom, because it was such a pleasure speaking to you today. Unfortunately, we're out of time for today, but if you want to learn more or follow Melody on Twitter, you could follow her at Melody Mozzi, M-O-E-Z-Z-I. And thank you for being on our show today.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm Andrew Donsky, along with Lisa Davis. This is Naturally Savvy Radio on Radio MD. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Your Radio MD and at Naturally Savvy. Thanks for listening, everyone, and stay well.